I think the main Homeland Security concern is not only the violence that we see on these campuses, but it's also the radicalization of our youth, of our college students, U.S. citizens that are there trying to study. And I think that's the major concern that we've seen in the United States over the last several years, and we've certainly seen it today, is, you know, you don't have to be a foreign terrorist organization and trying to, you know, come across the border. All you have to do is you have to start to radicalize individuals here in the U.S. To take further action down the line.
All right. I love Wednesdays. There's something about just knowing you're over the hump of the week that always makes me excited. And I have a busy weekend, so I don't know why I get that excited. It's like when you know you've got chores and you're going to be running around to soccer games and all sorts of stuff. I'm not really sure why I get that excited. It's not like I get to sleep in, but I digress. Anyway, it also means that Donald Trump gets to be on the campaign trail, and he's out in Michigan and Wisconsin today, making the case for his reelection. By the way, I mentioned this yesterday. Laura Trump is here Friday. I'm taking your ideas and suggestions. So if you have some, if you're on YouTube or Rumble and you want to put them in the box, you can always go to SeanSpicerShow.com/VIP, join up for our VIP group. You can email me, go to the Sean Spicer website, SeanSpicer.com. By the way, I mentioned this yesterday. I was talking about Jody Heiss's book. In my last, I was talking about Biden and the multiple positions that he's had. He's been pro-life, then he was definitely pro now, whatever he is, pro-choice, not even, he's anti-life. I wrote a book called Radical Nation. You can go to SeanSpicer.com and get signed copies of that and any of the books that I've done. But I was thinking about the other day because I was looking for a passage and I'm like, you know, the funny thing is so much of what I wrote in Radical Nation is still important today. It talks about the Biden plan and it's just as relevant as it was when I first wrote it as it is right now because this is their ultimate plan. He is trying to be the most progressive president ever. Well, you need to know that and to know what the real goal is. Today, in a little bit, I'm going to talk to Chad Wolf, former acting Secretary of Homeland Security. And part of what Biden's really doing is trying to get all these people into the country. And everyone walks around with this head-scratching look on their face, like, why are they letting people in? Why are they flying people in? From Gaza is a new report, by the way. They're flying Palestinians in. Then we've got another report. They're flying hundreds of thousands of people in, hundreds of thousands from four countries. They drop them in Florida and then disperse them around the country. Why? Why are they doing this? I mean, I don't know that we need to really debate this. They're coming to this country because they want them to become citizens and vote. And anyone who doesn't see that, I think, has their head screwed off wrong because it's obvious. And I want to ask Chad Wolf a little bit about this because we talk about Congress and the laws and the rule. But the bottom line is if the administration, if the executive branch does not actually implement them, then it doesn't matter. You can post a speed limit all day long on a road. If no one ever stops you, if the cops don't patrol the road and you know that you can go 60 miles an hour in a 30, who cares? You're not going to get a ticket. No one's going to pull you over. Then you go fast. That's what happens. Everyone always tells you, oh, you can park over there because no one ever patrols it. You can go fast on that road because it's never patrolled. Well, the Biden administration doesn't enforce our immigration laws. They're just going to keep coming in. And they know that. That's what they tell the cartels and everyone else. But now they're actually flying them in. And to put this in context, I grew up in Rhode Island. It's about 1 million people. Delaware's about 1 million people. They have now let in about half the state of Rhode Island, the half the state of Delaware, in a year. That have flown them in. These aren't the people coming in over the southern border. I'll talk to Chad Wolf about that in just a sec. Also overnight, the police are finally taking control of some of these campuses in Columbia, in New York, UCLA. These students, what a bunch of babies and brats. One of the girls comes out, and I say that, I'm sorry, I probably misgendered her. I should have asked for her pronouns. Comes out, does this press conference and says, we're requesting humanitarian aid be brought to us.
Well, first of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in, unless I misunderstood.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its students. Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic, I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is like basic humanitarian aid we're asking for. Like, could people please have a glass of water?
They barricade themselves in a dorm. They take it over and then they expect the university, because she said, we pay for the meal plan. What? Arrest her. Arrest her. Put it on her record so she can't get hired again. These are the same little twits that the Biden administration wants to, quote, forgive their loans and make you and I pay for. If we don't arrest these people now, they're going to go through life thinking that they're entitled to follow whatever laws that they want. They're entitled to squat. These are the people who are squatting, by the way. I'm convinced of it. But it is unbelievable, and I'm glad the police finally went in. But that also speaks to the lack of backbone that so many of these administrators have. Fire them too. What are you teaching kids that they get to take over your office and your dorms and pay no consequence? Fire them all. I just don't understand that. I'm also worried about who some of these, quote, professional agitators are that we're hearing about. I'm going to ask Chad Wolf about that in just a little bit. Should we really be concerned? I mean, I get it if it's like some U.S. nonprofit that's sending out tents to everybody so they can occupy illegally these grounds. But if it's some outside interest, if they're being funded by Hamas or some terrorist organization and they don't even know it, we should be aware of that. We should know if some people coming in over the southern border are doing some bad things. I, again, the lack of concern about the threat that this faces is astonishing. First, it's our southern border. Now it's these college campuses. We are literally showing our vulnerabilities every single day. I get a kick out of the fact I flew last weekend. We go through all these security measures to keep us safe. And I'm glad. I want to get on a plane and know that I'm safe. I'm going to go on a train and know I'm safe. And yet we let people walk over our southern border because they want to. We fly them in. We let people take over college campuses, camp illegally, take over buildings and dorms and offices with no consequence. What is going on? What is happening that we have no rule of law anywhere? What are we looking at? I mean, the next generation is going to just believe that they get to do what they want, where they want, and then we pay for it. It's concerning to me. By the way, I mean, you know politically how this whole Gaza issue is hurting the kids, right? With the Biden administration. The youth vote is a big problem, and they know it. They know they have a problem. So what did they do? Oh, yesterday, they changed the classification of marijuana. It was a Schedule I drug. Now, all these states are allowing you to do it, but it was still a federal crime. In fact, I saw a lot of people who couldn't get federal jobs in the White House because they'd smoked pot. It's against the law. It might be cool in Colorado or wherever you are, but it's still against the law. You cannot get a security clearance. Well, the Biden administration is now downgrading it to a Schedule III. They're treating it like Tylenol. I mean, I assume that the answer is we would just rather have you high because that's the only way you'll vote for us after you've seen our policies. You have to be high to continue to vote for Biden after what he has done policy-wise the last 3+ years. I mean, domestically, foreign policy-wise, maybe that's what they figure. The only way that we'll get these votes is if we just make sure that people can smoke a lot of pot. Right? I mean, I think that's what's happening here. Also today, the media is going nuts because Florida's 6-week abortion ban is going into effect. 6 weeks. They're freaking out. Your rights are under attack. You notice in any of these stories, any of them, the packages that they do on TV or the print articles, there's nobody ever quoted from the pro-life movement. There's no one that's ever had a positive experience that says, hey, I kept my child, I gave it up for adoption, kept my child and made me a greater person. They never include the other side, do they? Tells you everything you need to know about all these so-called media types. They call themselves reporter, I call them media types. They have an agenda. And it's very clear what it is. So I just say that because keep an idea over this. So this is going to be interesting how this all goes down, but a lot is happening here. I want to play you a funny clip before we get to Chad Wolf. and then we'll get to that, because, and then I'll talk to you a little on the back end. During the 2016 campaign, I dealt a lot with a lot of the reporters that you saw and see on television, right? Because they were out there covering this historic event. One of them was Katie Turr. She now has a show on MSNBC. I want to play you a clip that she had from MSNBC. Take a look.
And Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And
I
he
don't
has
think
the worst.
That anybody can accuse and me of that.
Okay. Now, you heard Katie Turr's response. I got to tell you, there is no one on the Trump campaign that would ever accuse Katie Turr of being like a Trump apologist. But this just shows you how ridiculous it is. If you are a Democrat and go on MSNBC and they even dare to push back a minute, then you're an apologist for the right for Donald Trump. I mean, my God, Google Katie Turr. This is not someone that is a go-to for the right. Anyone. She hosts a show on MSNBC as a reward for how she covered him. She's a nice person, by the way. I like her, but I'm just saying that, like, this was a ridiculous that Nancy Pelosi is attacking Katie Turr for being an apologist, but that's how they judge you. If you dare say anything that could be construed as common sense or normal or pragmatic, well, then you're an apologist. You should be going all out to convict the guy, to put him in jail, to silence him. And if you disagree with anything that we say, well, we will call you that. Pretty unbelievable. All right. I want to get to Chad Wolf because we have a great discussion about where we are both with these students and what's going on. Should we be worried? What keeps him up at night? What keeps the former Secretary of Homeland Security up at night? I'm going to ask him that question because I worry a lot about what's going on our border. So not just with Chad, the former Acting Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security, but he also right now is the Executive Director of and Chief Strategy Officer Chief Strategy Officer of America First Policy Institute and the chairman of their Homeland Security practice there. But they are putting forward policies all the time to help the next administration, the Trump second term, be ready to vet policies, to talk about ideas that the Trump administration could take off the shelf, maybe tweak a little, but go forward with. So it's ready day one. They're doing some amazing work over there. So let me bring Chad in after I tell you about two of the great sponsors that help make the show free across all platforms. And then we'll get to our discussion with Chad Wolf. If at the end of the day you have aching feet, I know what you're going through. You're on your feet all day long. The folks at Gravity Defier Shoes have created the perfect solution. They've used a combination of technology and orthotics to put together the perfect shoe for you. So at the end of the day, those aching feet are no more. So every pair of gravity defying shoes comes with orthotics. And if you've had foot problems, you know how important orthotics are to your footwear. Plus, they use Verso technology in every pair. That's the same kind of shock absorbing technology that's in a trampoline. So that takes that shock out of the heel. The shoes also help with your posture, meaning that you're taking a lot of the weight off of those key muscle groups. And at the end of the day, you feel a lot better than you probably do right now. The key, if you're looking to find this solution, is to go to GDEFY.com and you can enter code SPICER30. That's going to get you $30 off any order of $150 or more. Trust me when I say that at the end of the day, if you've had feet problems, if you feel achy and tired, Gravity Defier shoes are the solution. So use code SPICER30 and go to GDEFY.com and save $30 off any order of $150 or more. If you're an animal lover, then you know about my friend Leo Grillo. I've been talking about him for several months on the show. Leo Grillo founded Delta Rescue. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can see the amazing work that Leo has done with Delta Rescue. He has created a no-kill sanctuary for life for these animals. Now, you didn't notice I didn't say shelter because it's a sanctuary. It's where they can live forever. They get veterinarian care. They get nutrition. They can roam free. It's fantastic. But Delta Rescue completely relies on our contribution. So if you can make any kind of contribution, $50, $100, $1,000, it helps Leo keep the mission of Delta Rescue going. But even more so, if you are an animal lover, if you've rescued a dog or a cat or a horse or anyone else, and you realize how important something like this is, the work of Delta Rescue needs to go on. So yes, look at the videos on deltarescue.org. But if you can, go to the estate planning package and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your estate to make sure that Delta Rescue is an enduring mission that carries on for years and years to come. Thank you. Chad, always great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Sean.
You bet. So I want to get to the border and some of the national security and homeland security issues that we have. But it got me thinking about what's happening at these college campuses, because a lot of the police departments are now saying that outside agitators are on these campuses. Should this be a concern to us?
Well, I do. I do think it should be a concern. And look, we've seen this historically. You can go back to 2020 during the civil unrest, where we saw a bunch of demonstrations across the country. And what we found after some research and after some investigation is that it wasn't just local people in those communities, but instead it was those instigators and it was those professional people that protest that were flying into communities. So I suspect that you have, in places like Columbia University and other big universities, you probably have some outside folks who are not affiliated with the school, who are not students there, but are taking an opportunity to embed themselves in those, you know, in those institutions and in those protests. And we see them becoming more and more violent, both in their actions and their rhetoric.
So, but there's a difference, right, between outside agitators, they're American citizens that want to fund this, the George Soros types, and people that we need to be worried about who may have come in through the southern border or aren't U.S. citizens. Where's that line?
Yeah, well, look, I think you've got a number of folks, number of things to look at here. You've got students that are studying on these campuses that are in fact not US citizens, right? So they're foreign nationals who come over on a visa to study there in the United States. And then there's obviously, there's just folks here in the country that are illegal, as you indicated, that have come across that southern border in just historic numbers over the past 3 years that could also be embedded in on these campuses as well. And so I think the main homeland security concern is not only the violence that we see on these campuses, but it's also the radicalization of our youth, of our college students, U.S. citizens that are there trying to study. And I think that's the major concern that we've seen in the United States over the last several years, and we're certainly seeing it today, is, you know, you don't have to be a foreign terrorist organization and trying to, you know, come across the border, although there could be some of that. All you have to do is you have to start to radicalize individuals here in the U.S., to take further action down the line, not just at universities today, not just blockading a building or sitting in a tent, but what are they going to do 6 months, 9 months, 12 months from now as they've been radicalized during this process?
So for that reason, is it important that we, for lack of a better word, document who these people were? And by document, I mean arrest them and make sure there's part of their record so that 6 months, 9 months down the road, as you're saying, or maybe it's 6 years down the road, we can say, ah, see, this person was on a college campus, they broke the law here, and here is the progression of them.
Well, it's not only arresting those individuals that are taking actions that go beyond, you know, that First Amendment peacefully protesting. Obviously, we don't arrest people for that. But once their actions start to take a different turn, right, they're barricading themselves in a building, they're taking over a building, they won't listen to the commands of law enforcement and others, then yes, you need to take some enforcement action, because not only is it a deterrence, but as you indicate, you're understanding who they are. You also, you know, whether it's the Department of Justice, the FBI, local law enforcement, although I would say that the federal law enforcement's a little bit better able to do this, you need to start investigating, where is this money coming from? All of these protests that are taking place, it's not for free, right? It doesn't just happen. Right. They have to have some outside resources coming in to support and to help them. And I think that was one of the major downfalls in the summer of 2020, is we tried to understand where all this funding was coming from. And I think the FBI, the Department of Justice, has a role to play there.
That's kind of what I was going to ask you next is, for a lot of these things that are happening on college campuses, Columbia is a private university. The president finally called in the NYPD through May 15th to help them. May 17th, maybe that was the date. But it's sort of a local issue and then a local police and law enforcement issue. What is, beyond what you just mentioned, the proper role of the federal government and the federal agencies at this point?
Well, once it starts to take a very violent turn, right? It's one thing to sit in a tent and protest and not leave. It's another thing to break into buildings, right? We've seen those images, destruction of property, barricading yourselves. Then you start to get a more organized nature of that protest. And so that's when law enforcement needs to get more involved. And what you will likely see in a lot of these campuses, although Columbia is a little different, New York City Police Department is highly sophisticated. They have a lot of resources, a lot of investigative resources. They could probably do a lot of this on their own. But in other campuses across the country, they will likely call in some federal resources because they have different resources. They have different capabilities than local law enforcement there. Perhaps at that university. So it varies, but I think it's time to get folks involved. We need to understand, is this just happen to, you know, spring upon itself? I don't think it does. It looks very organized. And so what type of outside help and who is providing this funding? Is it just a nonprofit who believes in this cause, or is it Hamas? Is it someone else that is funding this? And I think it's important to know. It's important for American citizens to know this.
Yeah, I read one of the reports about how all of the tents look like they've actually come from the same source and the same company. And it just would be a little odd that that was the case. I want to turn our attention to something that there was a report in CBS News about this administration. It says senior officials across several federal U.S. agencies have discussed the practicality of different options to resettle Palestinians from Gaza who have immediate family members who are American citizens or permanent residents. As the former, I mean, this to me is another border issue. It's bringing people into the country. What should we be concerned about as citizens here in terms of our own security when we read something like that?
Yeah, I just, you know, on the face of it, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It doesn't make a lot of sense that you're going to Gaza, you know, a territory thousands of miles away, and that the European Union countries closer are not accepting these individuals. And the question is, why? Why are they not accepting them? But that is the proper role. If you're going to be a refugee, if you're going to leave your home country and you need to find a safe space, you do that closest to your home country so that when conditions improve, you're able to go back. This idea that only the United States can provide this type of safe haven to everyone around the world is just ludicrous. But this is what we've seen under the Biden administration. It's not to mention that we've also resettled, or we have about anywhere between 6 and 8 million individuals still residing in the United States that have come across that southern border, 400 to 500 Afghans that have been paroled into the United States. The question is, where does this end? It's not an unlimited stream of resources that we have here in the United States to continue to resettle refugees from around the world from every conflict. Instead, what we should be doing is working with our partners, our allies, and others in the region, in the EU and elsewhere to help resettle these individuals, whether it's in Egypt or it's other close countries. But this idea that you need to bring them into the United States and that's the only solution, I think for the Biden administration, this is more of a political move than it is anything else.
It's interesting that you bring that out because the Biden administration keeps talking about this immigration bill that didn't pass out of the Senate and obviously didn't go to the House. And yet that's an example of them flying people in from Gaza. Then there's this other story that came out talking about how many folks were flown into the country. Department of Homeland Security, this is your former agency, is revealing that more than 50 cities in the U.S., that hundreds of thousands of migrants are flown into via a controversial parole program from four nationalities, with the vast majority entering the U.S. via airports in Florida. Yeah. This is us bringing them in. This isn't even the southern border. We continue to do this. The idea that Biden says he needs Congress to act when they are actively flying people into this country doesn't seem to pass the smell test.
Well, it's not. It doesn't pass the smell test. And it's incredible that we've seen what the Biden administration is doing with that unlawful use of parole. So at the same time, all of these things are going on all at the same time, Sean. So as you have hundreds of thousands and even millions of individuals crossing that southern border illegally along the land border, you have flights overhead literally coming in from four different countries that they're flying into the United States to airports all over the country. At the same time, you're bringing in folks from Afghanistan and paroling them into the country. And now we hear that they want to do this from Gaza and elsewhere. And so the question is, like, when is enough enough? You know, the economy of the U.S., our social services, our public safety systems, and all of this cannot continue to receive these individuals. Not to say, not the least of which, it's an abuse of the parole authority that they're using as well. And so, again, I think millions of Americans are shaking their head.
The parole authority, explain that to me, because when I read these stories, I go, I didn't even know that existed. Is this a new thing? What gives? Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is a travel program. It's like, why don't you get a free flight in the United States and we'll take care of you? Hundreds of thousands of people. I think about the state. I grew up in Rhode Island. They've flown at least half of the state in the last year.
That's right. Well, they're using it very similar to a travel program. What they're basically saying is that these individuals from these four countries that they're giving parole to and flying them into the United States, they're saying that they will never, they won't qualify for asylum. They know that. And so they're saying, how else can we get them into the country? We can parole them in. Now, parole is historically used for very limited circumstances, very limited. And it's usually you're paroling one or two people in at a time. Maybe it's a medical treatment. Maybe they're testifying in a court of law. They do that for a couple of days, and then you remove them and you have them go back to their home country. You don't do what the Biden administration is doing, and which is a categorical parole. You're paroling thousands and hundreds of thousands of people into the country for 2 years. They get a work permit immediately, and they're here to stay. They're not leaving. The Biden administration knows this. And they just continue to do it, and they're very proud of it. They issue press releases about how well it's going. This is by design. Everything that you see along that southern border and over the last 3 years is by design, and they're executing on their strategy.
Losing power is no fun, but unfortunately, so many of us have experienced that. Sometimes it's a natural disaster. Sometimes it's a pole that got hit down. And even more nowadays, they're warning about attacks on our electrical grid. So if you are out of power for an hour, maybe a day, a week, maybe a month or more, would you be ready? Now, I know I am. I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X that I have in my house. And if you look at the video, it's literally in my house. I have it in my kitchen. I'm running an air fryer, a computer, all of these things, my phone, but you could run even your full refrigerator on the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It's portable, so you could bring it anywhere. If a family member or a friend was in trouble, you could bring it to them. It can go in your house, as I'm showing you right there. There's no gas. There's no fumes. It runs off solar panels that come free with it. It's powered by the sun. How great is that? No fumes in your house. No noise in your house. No cords getting streamed out. The Patriot Power Generator 2000X is exactly what you need when the power goes out. Now, we know we don't want that to happen, but the odds are that it's going to happen, and you need to be ready like I am. Get the Patriot Power Generator 2000X right now by going to 4patriots.com/Spicer. 4patriots.com/Spicer, and be ready when an emergency comes your way. So when these paroled people come in, first of all, who are they? Do they literally, is there an application that you fill out? And secondly, to your point about not getting kicked out, what do, are they on a path to citizenship and to be able to vote?
They're not on a path specifically. So they have a two-year kind of parole authority that allows them to stay in the United States. Again, they get to travel freely within the United States. They get work authorization. They get other benefits as well. And at the end of 2 years, either the Biden administration is going to have to say, we're going to give them another 2 years. They're going to have to be removed from the country. Some will start to claim asylum. Watch for this, which I think is really, really interesting, which is you've been in the country for a year or more, and then they'll claim asylum from wherever they came, trying to remain here. Or the administration will give them temporary protective status, which they do quite liberally as well. And so there's a variety of different mechanisms that they can do to keep these individuals here. You're not putting them on a pathway per se, but you are allowing them to remain here in the country, which we've seen is kind of what the end goal is.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. But what gets even more shocking is there's a report that just came out that says the Biden administration's top border official declined to confirm that migrants who come over the southern border illegally are being vetted by federal law enforcement. So it's not just even that we're letting them in. We're not even vetting them to find out if they pose a danger to the country.
Yeah, and vetting these individuals is very difficult. It's hard to vet them to begin with when you have so many, right? And it's a processing line. And so they have to do it really quickly. And so it's, you don't get to sit down, you don't get to do interviews, you don't get to talk to these individuals for long periods of time, which you would normally want to do to understand who they are. And of course, where they come from, many instances, these countries don't have great records. And so you try to vet an individual from Ecuador or from Venezuela or Nicaragua, and what are you vetting them against, right? You're vetting them against information that their home country perhaps is providing, but you don't know how good that is. And so it's very difficult to understand who these individuals are in. But as you're processing them so quickly, you're losing the ability to really dig down into their background and understand that. That's what we've seen for 3 years now.
So if you're a career civil servant at the Department of Homeland Security where you led, what is the morale like? I mean, I get the Border Patrol might be a little upset, but overall, I assume that people who go to work there, post 9/11 in particular, are there because they feel a deep sense of commitment to protecting the country from future threats. Do you get the sense that the career folks are on board with this plan?
Well, I think, when you look at DHS, the law enforcement officers, I think, are highly frustrated, whether it's Border Patrol, whether it's ICE, or whether it's any other part of DHS, because law enforcement officers at the end of the day want to enforce the law. They want to keep people safe. They want to keep bad things out of the country, and they're not being allowed to do that. I think if you look at like headquarters staff and personnel, they're probably a little bit more in tune with what the Biden administration is. They seem to be bent a little bit more on providing more access to individuals coming into the country. They have a little different view than a law enforcement officer does because they get to sit in headquarters. They don't actually interview anyone. They don't actually talk. They don't go down to the border. They don't see those national security threats up close and personal. For them, it's more theoretical. And when you get individuals like that, they tend to be a little bit more aligned with the Biden administration.
So I know you guys at FPI do a lot of policy work and discussions about the next administration. There was a poll I shared with the audience earlier this week that came out from Axios that shows the percent of Democrats who say that they support the following policies. And the one at the top of the list was implementing mass deportations of undocumented immigrants. 42% of Democrats support that. Okay. And then when you ask about travel bans, implementing travel bans on people from certain countries, it's 38%. Closing the southern border entirely, 35%. So clearly, despite the legacy media's lack of interest in this story, the message is getting through on a bipartisan basis. What do you guys and what do you recommend that people running for office do to continue to call attention to this issue?
I think you just lead with the facts and you lead with what immigration law tells us to do, which is to say for individuals, we should stop, obviously, folks that come into the country illegally. But for those that come and are released into American communities, they need to be removed once they have due process. And once an immigration judge says they have no legal right to be here, let's start removing individual. This idea, and the legacy media has done a great job of this. They try to paint this idea of you're deporting someone, you're removing, you're repatriating any individual. Well, that's bad. You know, the United States is somehow seen as taking a terrible action if we're going to remove someone back to their home country, even if the home country is a little bit poor. It's not as wealthy as the United States. But this is an integral part of our immigration law, of anyone's immigration law, which is there's got to be a consequence for individuals that come here the wrong way, illegally. They don't have a right to be here. You need to remove them. And so what I would say to folks is just lean into that, because I think in some of that polling shows that most Americans understand that concept. You're going to have the far left who says, well, we shouldn't remove anyone because, you know, it's dangerous back in their home countries. Well, that hasn't been proven. If they're truly being persecuted, they'll get asylum protections here in the United States. Otherwise, if they don't have a reason to be here, lawful reason, we need to remove them.
Based on everything that you've known in the past in terms of the briefings that you used to get of classified intelligence, how concerned are you about an attack on the homeland from somebody who came into this country illegally, from, of 10 being imminent to one, I sleep soundly at night?
Yeah, I do not sleep soundly at night over these past several years. I think you've got a number of things going on. Not only do you have a wide open border, but you have other things that are going on in the world, whether it's the fall of Kabul and that the disastrous withdrawal in Afghanistan and bringing hundreds of thousands of Afghans who weren't properly vetted and being released here into the country. obviously, you've got what's going on in Israel today and Hamas and others. And so you've got all these different things going on in the world. And at the same time, you have an open southern border that allows individuals to come in and then be released into American communities. So there's a number of things that are starting to line up here. And I think you just have to look at the FBI director, Director Wray, who's testified now a couple of different times over the past 4 months, who says all the lights are blinking red. We should be concerned about the threat here to the homeland and the opportunity for violence. And so I'm very concerned. I don't know why the Biden administration is not equally as concerned. And I don't know why they're not taking some pretty dramatic actions to better secure the homeland. But it seems to be business as usual. And let's not do anything differently. And if we do announce anything, our announcement is going to be how we can bring more individuals from overseas into the homeland.
I think we all know the real reason, that they're just playing with the odds. We want more people in this country that could potentially vote for us. And we think that the odds of them doing something are bad. And if something bad happens, we'll just blame it on Republicans for not passing a bipartisan bill. I mean, and they know they have the media with them. There's one last thing I want to get to you today with you today. Yesterday, my former colleague, you served at the same time that Derek Lyons was staff secretary. He's now leading an organization that deals with election integrity. And he was on the show yesterday. And one of the things that I've asked all these folks as I cover this topic is what prevents an illegal from voting? And because we know that all these states give them driver's licenses.
Right.
And so Derek kept saying, you know, that there are these sort of competing messages, right? One is, well, it's illegal to do that. So first of all, you're talking about someone who broke the law to come into this country. So why are they stopping suddenly now? But more importantly, that the Democrats are sending these messages that talk about how important it is to vote overall, writ large, because there's one group of people that are going to support mass deportations, i.e. wink, nod, you, who are in this country illegally. So it's smarter for you to actually vote for us, right? They're basically encouraging them to do that because it's in their best interest to stay in this country by continuing another illegal activity, i.e. voting. Well, the Heritage Foundation put out a video that shows flyers coming from the Resource Center in Mexico that show and encourage people to come into this country and vote illegally. But, you know, when I was at the RNC during the 2016 election, we were brought into DHS headquarters and they gave us a briefing on the elections and told us in unequivocal terms that our elections were going to be safe. Could you give that same briefing today based on what we know about how many people are coming in?
Well, I think we're talking about two different things here, Sean, and I share a lot of your concerns, at least from the Department of Homeland Security's perspective. When they talk about a safe and secure election, it's about the integrity of the voting machines themselves, the physical infrastructure of those voting machines. It has nothing actually to do with illegals voting, voter rolls not being cleaned, you know, dead people on voter rolls, illegal votes being cast, and things of that nature. And I think that's where the department and specifically CISA has gotten crosswise with the American people over the last several years, is they've gone a little bit beyond their mandate. They don't have the expertise nor the reach or the understanding to know what's going on across every single state. What they have a good understanding, though, is are voting machines being compromised by any cyber events, things of that nature. And so when I hear you say, hey, the election is safe and secure, it's safe and secure from an equipment standpoint, but there are many, many different things, as you indicate, that can influence and can go on illegally in an election that DHS has no control over.
That's important to note, though, right? Because yep. You're right. I mean, the cyber infrastructure agency that you mentioned was so unequivocal that we were safe. But it may be true on the cyber front, right. But the idea that people are voting illegally who shouldn't be, that's not in the jurisdiction of the Department of Homeland Security, is it?
It is not. No. These elections are run at the state level, and these states have an obligation to make sure that U.S. citizens are voting there. What we've seen is obviously they're not doing their job. Yeah. An individual can check a box and say, I'm a U.S. citizen, when they know they're not. They can get on the voter rolls. They can attempt to vote and do a number of things. And so it's up to these individual states to make sure that you actually only have U.S. citizens voting, certainly in federal elections. And I think there's a real concern out there that job is not being done.
You are correct. Chad Wolf, always appreciate your time and the great work that the folks over at America First Policy Institute are doing to help us get ready for a second Trump term. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
You bet. All right, folks. What a great discussion with Chad. The thing that's interesting about that discussion, one, is I do think what he said at the very end is worth noting. There's a big difference because you heard after the last election, the most secure election in history. He's absolutely right. This CISA organization, you probably heard about it. There's the executive director of it came out and did all these press interviews after the election. They handle cybersecurity. So what they were saying is, hey, we haven't had any cyber attacks. Okay. That doesn't get to how many people might have voted illegally that weren't allowed to do it. How many people came over the border, got a license, and went there? That's not their responsibility. I'm glad Chad cleared that up. It was a crucial thing for him to clear up because the media doesn't want to talk about that. These are state-run elections. And if one state gives a license to somebody and then they go vote in another state or even that state alone, unless that state calls it out, it's like a tree falling in the forest, man. If no one was there to witness it, that it happened. I'm just telling you, there's a lot that came of that I think is so important. But the other thing that I thought was interesting, and I brought up that poll with Democrats, I brought it up earlier in the week, but there's another one. Mark Penn, the former Hillary pollster, leads the Harvard-Harris poll that comes out monthly. And he sent a note out. They released the latest one this week. Immigration and inflation continue to be the voters' top concerns, tied at 35% each month. Shows a 44% approval rating for Biden. It's an 11-point deficit compared to Trump, who's currently at 55. But as you saw, immigration is still a big issue. This is why I get so riled up about this, because Democrats are now on board. You heard what I was just telling you a minute ago about mass deportations. The media gets so fired up. Oh my God, Trump said this in a Time magazine interview, mass deportations. Guess what? You numbnuts are so liberal hanging out at your little country clubs and parties and yacht clubs that you don't see what's happening in America. People are actually, in a bipartisan way, saying enough. We're concerned about the security of our country because of so many different effects that it's having on our societies and our community. They don't. But even Democrats do. So I continue to think this is going to be a big thing. And I think what he was saying before was important in terms of the state issue. We need to be vigilant in this. And we heard it yesterday from Jody Heiss when he talked about it. If you can be a poll watcher in your local precinct or your town, maybe your precinct's covered, do it. We need people at the time that can document things and share their concerns. We watch somebody walk in and they did this and the election worker said no problem, whatever it is. If we don't see it and don't document it, it didn't happen. It's like a crime. They can't go out and arrest people for hypothetical situations. They can only do it if you can document it and you can see it. So please do it. The last thing I want to touch on today was an interesting story that came out in the New York Post. And it details this plot to oust Corinne Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary. So the story in the New York Post, written by White House correspondent Steve Nelson, goes something like this. Anita Dunn, who is, by all intents and purposes, I think her title is technically senior advisor, but she oversees all of the messaging and communications at the White House. I mean, she is the mother bear, right? Her husband, by the way, is Bob Bauer, President Biden's personal attorney. And they've known the guy forever. I mean, they are in the inner circle. So she hatches this plan to get a bunch of prominent Democrats to reach out to Corinne Jean-Pierre and say, yeah, you know, Corinne, maybe it's time you move on. I'm sure there's something that you could get. And Corinne's answer is no. I mean, she consulted her book. She opened it up and said, I'm not able to further comment on that. I'm kidding. But that was, I'm sure she had to consult her book to answer her own question. But Anita Dunn apparently loops in Jeff Zients, the White House chief of staff, and a bunch of other people who got contacted by Anita Dunn are leaking this out that are saying, hey, Anita Dunn reached out to us. We tried to push Corinne to go. Corinne thinks, by the way, according to the story, that she's doing an amazing job. I mean, I guess when she compares herself to Kamala, maybe she is. But she thinks she's doing a great job. And so this story talks about how she's being pushed out and blah, blah, blah. But it was a great, interesting thing. And I think we've probably heard the last of it, because if it wasn't for the New York Post, nobody would tell this story. But anyway, I digress. As I mentioned, tomorrow, an amazing panel will break down everything that's going on in the week, the winners, the losers of the week, et cetera. And then Friday, Laura Trump is going to be with us talking about where we are and what we need to do to win. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you guys being here. Remember to subscribe on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, for that sake. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show.